And welcome to Quilted Sheviot's Market and Cut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we've been exploring for you here at Quilted Sheviot. Do remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following at QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. This week, I'm your host, Fraser Wilkinson, Investment Manager based in our Leeds office. And I'm pleased to be joined by our regular podcast guest, Richard Carter, our Head of Fixed Interest Research, and Ben Barringer, our Equity Research Analyst on all things technology. Good morning to you both. Richard, last year, all investment focus seemed to be on inflation and interest rate rises. Is that now all in the past, or are there more surprises to come this year?
I wouldn't say it's all in the past. I mean, I think the sort of theme is potentially less important than last year, because last year, you know, interest rates were very low and inflation had started low, and then both of them built up a lot, and it was as the year went on, and it was a really big shock. Now the sense is that we're closer to the peak in interest rates and inflation's coming down. So things are definitely looking much better on that score. But we're still not quite sure where exactly the peak will be, both in the US with the Fed and the Bank of England here in the UK. There is still, you know, huge debate about will they get to sort of 5%, will it be 5.5%? So we're going to be watching inflation data very closely over the next few weeks and jobs data. But as I say, I'm hoping that increasingly these sorts of concerns are sort of slightly in the past.
Well, fingers crossed. Just to zoom in on inflation, the numbers that come out say inflation is currently about 10.5%, but I've got to admit, I'm finding some differences. When I go to Tesco's, for example, the Jaffa Cakes packet is a third smaller and costs 50% more. Why is there the difference in sort of official and perceived inflation?
I'm not sure what it is about Jaffa Cakes particularly. You might need to move to a different type of biscuit. I mean, you do always have, you know, the overall level, you know, of inflation. Sometimes people's own experiences are very, very different, whether that's from sort of filling up the car or going to the supermarket. But generally, you know, if we look at what has been going up a lot over the last few months, it is food. So food prices have been on the rise, and that's the sort of lagged impact from the rise in energy prices. But I can't guarantee your Jaffa Cakes, but generally the aggregate in inflation does seem to be coming down. And so hopefully this time in the next few months, that will be less of a concern for you.
Excellent. Thank you. Reading through various market commentaries recently, it seems that fixed interest investment is being talked about a lot more. Are fixed interest investments low risk, in inverted commas? And what risks are there to consider when investing in this area?
Yeah, I mean, the difference with fixed income markets versus last year, obviously, is that the yields have gone up a lot over the last 12 months or so. I mean, last year was a very difficult time for bond investors. But now people are looking at, you know, some of the yields available in the market and thinking they look attractive. So whether that's sort of, you know, 3.5%, 4% for a UK gilt or a US Treasury, or, you know, sort of more than that for a corporate bond, maybe 5.5%. So that's why it's getting more attention and people are sort of, you know, dipping a toe back in the market, really. In terms of, is it low risk, is it not? It depends a little bit what you buy, really. I mean, if you buy a sort of short-dated gilt or a short-dated investment-grade corporate bond, the risk, you know, is fairly low, and the sort of potential drawdowns are fairly low. But as last year demonstrated, there are also parts of the market which are, you know, longer maturity or have more credit risk that can be risky. So it's really about working out what your aims are when you're buying bonds and making sure you're sort of generally in the right area.
Mm. Looking to the big picture, the news seems to be pretty excited and alarmed on TV about Chinese weather balloons. How is geopolitical uncertainty priced into today's market?
I wouldn't say it is hugely. I mean, these alien balloons or whatever they are, high-tech Chinese balloons that seem to be suddenly detected. I think they've been, actually, to be honest, I think they've been there for some time, but the US has never really made much of a fuss about it. I don't think markets are too concerned about that, but there is obviously, you know, a long-run worry about, you know, US-China tensions over things like Taiwan and where that's all going to lead to. I think in terms of where is it priced into markets, it's not. I mean, you know, you worry about Russia and Ukraine. I mean, actually, natural gas prices have been coming down quite a lot. Oil prices have stabilized. And if you look at Chinese equities and Asian equities, they've been doing pretty well this year. So arguably with geopolitical tensions, you know, until it sort of really builds up into something significant, people tend to sort of not, you know, worry too much about it, or at least it doesn't stop them investing in areas where they think in the short term could do quite well. But that might change in the future. But for now, I think people are relatively sanguine about sort of certainly the China issues.
Yes. Yeah, doom and gloom seems to get people's attention. But what positives do you see at the moment? What surprises might we see?
I think it's going back to what we said earlier. You know, the inflation, you know, was last year worrying about inflation and interest rates. We're definitely getting there on the interest rate side, and inflation is coming down. And as long as that carries on, then, you know, the central banks have kind of done their work, and that should be good for investors. And the other thing, actually, people worrying about recession this year, we may get there at some stage, but for now, most economies seem to be holding up a little bit better than expected. So actually, that sort of plays into why it's been quite a good start to the year for markets.
Thank you, Richard. Turning to Ben, technology stocks seem to have had a bad year last year. Are things looking more positive for the sector, or are you a little bit cautious?
So we've had a good start to 2023, actually, as you say, after a pretty poor 2022. NASDAQ's actually up 14% year to date. And if you look at the sort of reasons behind that, you know, it's largely what Richard's been talking about, rate expectations starting to ebb a little bit, becoming less of a headwind, I think is the best way to think about it. And especially when you start thinking about terminal rates, because as we talked about, you know, all the way through last year, technology, well, equities are relatively long duration, but technology shares are even longer duration. So you know, small changes in that long-term terminal rate really make a difference to the valuations of tech. The other thing that's important to say is that, you know, we've seen quite a lot of estimate cuts, particularly in semiconductors. So 70% of the cuts that have happened in tech have happened in the semiconductor area. And that's because they're much more cyclical, right? You know, tech is acyclical, but semis are used to this not only cyclicality, but also, you know, it's very hard to balance supply and demand. And we saw that through COVID, right? There was a shortage of supply. Now we're seeing a shortage of demand. And so that supply demand balance is quite is showing some signs of coming more back into balance, basically. The semiconductor area is very cyclical. It's used to having these imbalances, and typically a downturn lasts about 4 to 6 quarters. Well, we're about 3 or 4 quarters into that downturn now, and so people are starting to look through the downturn, past the bottom, and to towards the recovery. Obviously, you know, stock markets try and look sort of 12, 18 months ahead, and we're trying to do the same. And so, you know, incrementally more positive outlook for semiconductors, certainly.
Oh, that's good news. Some of the stocks that you cover specifically, they've just had their fourth quarter earnings announced, and we've been hearing of some layoffs. What were the highlights for earnings?
Yeah, look, I think I characterise the Q4 earnings so far from certainly the big tech names as okay, but not stellar, right? And so you're seeing slowing growth rates, right? IT budgets are cyclical, and so you're going to see these slowdowns. You know, the key thing we're watching for is there's two areas of spend, really. Cloud spending, which has been slowing from sort of, you know, high 40s down to sort of mid 30s in the case of Microsoft. Amazon Web Services, that slowed down, you know, from sort of 30% to 20%. So, you know, slowing growth rates, but as I say, things are cyclical, and still a 20% growth rate isn't too bad in a downturn. Google similarly reported 7% overall top line growth, but again, weakness in advertising, which is another, you know, area of cyclicality within tech. Apple has been quite strong in the last sort of 3 or 4 quarters and been quite resilient, despite the smartphone going backwards. iPhone sales and other devices has been quite good. This this quarter was a little bit, you know, starting to see those signs of macro weakness. You know, it's always difficult. You know, is your iPhone, is it a luxury good? And so, you know, do you treat yourself, or is it like a PC and it much more of a commodity? And I think the truth is probably somewhere in between. So they're forecasting sort of flat growth probably for the next quarter. And I think that's probably fair. Interestingly, the two companies that had the best Q4 numbers, I think, were companies that have previously been in the doghouse. Netflix is certainly starting to see, you know, a return to subscriber growth. That's largely been driven by a very good content slate, particularly in the fourth quarter. But also they've got some other things up their sleeve in terms of, you know, turning to an advertising supported model. So you'll be able to get a cheaper version of Netflix, but you'll have to see adverts. Some people will like that, some people won't. And then obviously, you know, there's a lot of password sharing that goes on. Netflix are gradually clamping down on that and trying to get people to pay if they don't, you know, use Netflix as a full account holder. So that's been quite promising for Netflix. And then the other doghouse company has been Facebook. And actually, Facebook, we said about a year ago that Facebook faced some fairly, you know, big challenges in terms of competition from things like TikTok. It faced some fairly difficult attribution and identifying its customers, right? So Facebook's unique selling point has always been that it's been able to do targeted advertising. Well, some of the changes that Apple made in terms of app tracking have meant that it can't target exactly, you know, who it's advertising to. It started to use artificial intelligence to improve that targeting. And although it can't identify you individually, it knows an awful lot more about you in a sort of an anonymous way. And then finally, you know, Reels, their short video platform, you know, the short videos that you see on Facebook, that's been gaining some quite good traction. The final thing, and you alluded to this in your question, you saw this at Facebook, and I think you saw this pretty much across all of the large tech companies, is that they're responding with cost cutting. You know, Mark Zuckerberg particularly had gone sort of all out in terms of investing in capital spending, and particularly in the metaverse. He's reined that back quite significantly now, and so people are. He's gaining more credibility, and I think tech in general is getting more credibility because it's able to pull that profitability lever. It's, you know, the last 10 years probably have all been about growth and gaining share and growing markets, but it shows that, you know, some of these companies are fantastic as well at cost control. They've got really good control of their operating leverage, essentially. So yeah, I think that's been a positive sign for Q4. But, you know, clearly we'd prefer more growth, but let's see how the macro progresses. But it's great that these businesses are able to pull that cost lever.
You touched on artificial intelligence with Facebook, and I have been hearing just in the press just a lot of talk about artificial intelligence with ChatGPT and rivals coming out. There's talk of artificial intelligence replacing many jobs, as they seem to be able to write articles, ad campaigns, even computer programs. Will artificial intelligence really change the world? And if so, which stocks are going to benefit?
Yeah, great question. Look, I've been dealing in the last week with a lot on this, but we've been talking about artificial intelligence as a driver. But basically, for artificial intelligence, you need two things, right? You need a huge amount of data, and you need a huge amount of compute power. And cloud computing has really enabled the advances in artificial intelligence that we've seen in the last 5 years, because it allows you to store data relatively cheaply, and then it allows you to do that really intensive compute work as well. So to answer the jobs question up front, look, this has always been an issue for technology for the last 1,000 years. People always think their job is going to get replaced by technology, be it the plow, the printing press, you know, you name it. But what computers are extremely good at is doing mundane tasks well, right? Repetition and so on. And this is just another iteration of that. Let's dig specifically into ChatGPT. So that GPT is a generative pre-trained transformer model. Now, what I'm basically trying to say is that these models look at a whole load of data and are able to look for patterns. And then when you ask it a question, it's able to sort of understand the question, or hopefully understand the question, and then generate something that you have from what it knows about to answer your question, right? And the one that's come out most recently is called ChatGPT-3. It uses 175 billion parameters. So it has sort of ideas about 175 billion things, coefficients, and it was trained in 2021. So if you ask it, you know, about current affairs, it won't have any good answers, but it is quite good at answering general questions about the state of the world back in 2021. It is quite a big deal, and we take it quite seriously. This is the first piece of the fastest piece of technology to 100 million users, right? So it took 3 months for ChatGPT to get 100 million monthly active users. To contextualize that, it took TikTok 9 months to do that, and it took Instagram 2.5 years to get to that sort of size. As I say, you can ask the model questions, and it provides credible, although not perfect, answers. What's really under threat here, Fraser, is 11-year-old's homework, right? I don't think university theses are under threat here, because there's still quite a lot of errors and it's not perfect. Somebody once described it as like having a boring dinner party guest, right? Somebody who knows quite a lot, but it's not quite right. It produces very credible sort of generic content. Go and have a play with it. I mean, it's fantastic. And there's also a images version. So if you ask it to do a picture of an England footballer in the style of Banksy, right, it will produce you something that's quite credible image, knowing what it knows about England footballers and what it knows about Banksy as a style of image. That one's actually called DALL-E 2, that model. So, you know, all very exciting, but very much in what we call a hype cycle in tech investing, right? Everyone's very excited about the opportunity and the possibilities, and everyone's doing lots of work to work out what it really means, experiment with it, and so on. And that's why you've seen that, you know, big rush in usage. What does it mean in terms of investment? Look, Microsoft have invested about $11 billion. We don't know exactly how they've invested that $11 billion in this OpenAI project. So OpenAI, the ChatGPT runs on a project called OpenAI, which isn't quoted. But what it's going to do is incorporate some of the technology into Bing, its search engine, and then Edge, its browser. And that is very squarely taking, putting its tanks on the lawn of Google, right? Google dominates in terms of search queries. It dominates in terms of browsers as well, very often. So that's a big threat to Google. So Microsoft did a presentation last week. Google did a presentation last week, which didn't go quite as well, had some tech errors in it, and actually wiped off about 175 billion off the Google share price. So it was a 36-minute presentation which wiped 175 billion off the share price. So, you know, we still think that Google has a lot to do is an AI powerhouse, but it has a lot to do in terms of explaining how it's going to use these models in search. What you got to remember is that Google has an 85% share in search, and it's about a $200 billion a year market. And so, you know, there's a huge upside for Microsoft if it can take share in search. In terms of, so, you know, you could buy Microsoft, you could, well, we think that actually Google's reasonably cheap and discounts an awful lot today. But the other areas that you could invest in, the processing that's done is mainly done on things called GPUs, graphics processing units, right? And the dominant player in that area is NVIDIA. So you could buy NVIDIA stock. We like NVIDIA, but also sitting sort of in the sidelines a little bit would be AMD, which also has GPU processing, but it also, once you've trained a model, you need to get it to do inference, i.e. use the model on an ongoing basis. And that's very much the home of AMD processors. So like AMD, you also require a huge amount of memory to do all of this processing. And so we like memory companies like Micron there as well. And then the final piece to talk about in terms of artificial intelligence is just general software companies, right? You will notice that things like LinkedIn and Teams already incorporate sort of, would you like to say this when you're replying to a message, you know, little bits of artificial intelligence. We've seen what you've been talking about, and here's the, you know, we predict that you might want to say that. Little tiny things that just save you time. It's not doing your job, it's just saving you time. And so being able to incorporate more artificial intelligence into software, I think, is very much the way that things are going to be going. In fact, the way that the industry is starting to talk about it is that you have an AI co-pilot, right? He's not flying the plane, but he's keeping a very good eye on you. Very exciting times. As I say, do be a little bit careful. I've seen plenty in my career. I've seen plenty of hype cycles. There's lots of excitement. There's lots of, oh, this is going to change and that's going to change. But let's just think about, you know, what the social responsibility angles mean. You know, how do we enforce and interrogate the answers that are being given by ChatGPT, or things like intellectual property. Now, I talked about that picture, that Banksy picture. Who owns that picture? Do I own it because I did the query? Does ChatGPT own it, or DALL-E 2 own it? Or does Banksy own that piece of art, right? And so all of these things that have to sort of come in the second wave of the hype cycle, what's called the trough of disillusionment, actually. And then you get what's called the slope of enlightenment as this technology takes off. All terrible buzzwords, but it's one of these kind of cycles that we've seen many times before. But key message, we do think ChatGPT and artificial intelligence continues to have a place and will be further integrated into all the technology that we use.
Fantastic. Well, I don't know if I've ever told you, Ben, but my favorite program when I was growing up was one called Tomorrow's World, which was always telling me about how the future is going to be different and there will be flying cars and all the rest of it. So one last question, can't let you go without asking, is there anything that we've not really heard about that some of these technology companies are working on that might really, really game change in the future?
Not really. I mean, the issue for the big tech companies is always, is it a big enough technology to really move the needle for them, right? So if you think about the services business within Apple, right? So Apple Pay and all of those kinds of services, that would be a sort of Fortune 50 business. But within Apple, it doesn't really take off. That's why they have lots of sort of little mini ventures and things like that. No, I mean, look, we've done a lot of work on quantum computing, but again, it has very niche applications. It's, very good at molecular biology and things like that, but actually finding a way to invest in it, and is it going to completely revolutionize the way that we all use computers? Will we have a quantum computer sat in front of our desk? No, not really. So now that's very much my job, trying to work out these technologies as they come up, appraise them, and then work out whether they're investable. I would argue that artificial intelligence is very investable, whereas quantum computing isn't. So not as far as I'm aware, but that's kind of my job every day, right?
Brilliant. Well, thank you, Ben, and thank you, Richard, both for those great insights, and to all of you for listening. I hope you enjoyed our discussion on the podcast today. We would love to hear from our listeners, so please do review the show now, wherever you're listening, and share it on your socials. You can tag us at @QuiltAchieveIt. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, please just tap the subscribe button. We will be back next Tuesday, and in the meantime, you do head over to our website, www.quiltachieveit.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and upcoming events and webinars on our website or on our social media pages. And finally, if you have any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast, simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We'd love to hear your questions. That's it for today. So thank you both again, and thank you all for listening. See you next time.